Hi, friends. It's me, Abby Green. I'm so proud to announce my podcast, Sex, Politics, and Bacon. You are going to love it. You'll hear all about my outrageous Abby stories, from running with presidents and prime ministers or living in rural villages, or about busting drug dealers in New York City or fighting for those incarcerated in Alaska. You'll get to hear from all the crazy characters I've met throughout my adventures. Doctors changing the way we think about vaginas, Olympic martial artists, brilliant lawyers, wonderful criminals, political candidates, and yes, even fire eaters. I've got three amazing co-hosts, which I gathered from the land of misfit toys, and will bring you laughs, perspective, comfort, and hope. If you're feeling overwhelmed and like you can't catch your breath, subscribe to Sex, Politics, and Bacon. Find comfort in caring friends, good food, and really, really funny people. I guarantee you will laugh your ass off. I've created some amazing content, and I can't wait to share it with you. So subscribe to Sex, Politics, and Bacon. This week on Sex, Politics, and Bacon, my thrifty team and I discuss our feelings about gravy in its various forms. Kim and I chat with Dr. Alyssa Quimby, a good friend, an awesome OBGYN empowering women and girls to celebrate their bodies. Becca tells the tales of Halloween past, involving a few dumbbells and a bad habit, and Duncan introduces us to the fire and flow arts in anticipation of our upcoming chat with an American rope dart icon. Join us as we talk sex, politics, and bacon.
Jump in the line, rock the body in time.
Okay.
I feel. How are we doing?
Well, I can tell you what day it is. It is Wednesday, my dude.
It is Wednesday, my dudes. Our favorite OBGYN and yours, Phyllis, fills us in on her new campaign, Femme Ed.
Phyllis fills us.
You said fills us in.
Phyllis fills us. Phyllis fills us.
There's no Phyllis's.
Who's Phyllis?
It's Phyllis. Phyllis fills us.
Philip Philbin. Phyllis fills us.
Join us because we can say Phyllis 100 times and find it funny.
Yeah, but it's Phyllis fills us. But it's funny because it sounds the same, but it's different.
Yeah.
It's like a tongue twister, like Phyllis fills us. Phyllis fills us.
And we
Phyllis
know. Fills us.
The first time I touched a rope dart, it was at a party, and my friend Allie had an LED rope dart there, and I'd been hanging around her vape shop for a while, and I'd seen them do poi and hula hoop, and I'd seen the dart and kind of touched it a little bit, but not really picked it up and played with it. And that party, she was like, here, take it. Go out there, do some stuff. And when I really started to let go and get into it, I immediately had this realization of, oh, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life.
That's awesome. That's a great feeling. Kudos.
And flow is one of those things that I encourage everyone to try because I know exactly what it's like to start. You see these complicated movements and almost dance-like things, and it's like, I can't be that good. Like, what? Why would I even try? I'll look silly. And everybody looks silly starting out. That's how you get good. And it's not about looking good. It's not about being the best and the most badass. It's about the flow and feeling it. And it's something that we can all share. And you feel wonderful when you finally just kind of like, I'm doing this. I'm playing with my prop and fuck what I look like.
I think one of the hardest things for us as humans on this planet, but especially Americans and especially, I guess, any humans at this moment, is that's the best thing for us to do. Is a little bit of submit and go with the flow. Like, whether it's, okay, my kid's going to watch more screens than I like, or they're going to eat hot dogs for 7 days in a row, or whatever, or I'm going to put a faux potted plant in my ripped up bathroom, because what the F else am I going to do with it?
A prop gives you license to move in ways that you otherwise never would consider. And when you have a pair of poi or something in your hand where you can move through that thing, it really unlocks an aspect of your body and you become more aware of your spatial occupancy in a way. But something interesting about flow is something that we refer to as the flow state, which is this wonderful feeling that you get that it doesn't happen often. You have some days where it's ruts and it's really hard to do, but some days you just hit everything just right and all of your moves are stringing together. Your tech is really being exemplified. Tech means technique. And you're doing it. You're on fucking fire. And you're just in that state for a while. A few minutes, maybe you get an hour. But it is one of these most wonderful, deep feelings ever, because it's just, you're at peace in a way, but moving and focused on something. But everything else drops away.
You said hula hoop, right? Small hoop and big hoop and like zigzag through the legs. And I'm like, I could watch those forever. Or roller skating. It doesn't fully translate, but it definitely is releasing dopamine in my brain when I'm watching other people nail it and hit it. And then on Abby's thread, in terms of yoga, sun salutation all day. That's like a series of moves that, like, once you like are getting into it, like that you just do every practice, that I think is also related to flow.
Yay!
Well, welcome, Alyssa. Thank you so much for doing this. I mean,
absolutely.
I would think your time was precious anyway, but with COVID and like all this cool stuff that you're doing in addition to your day job, we just really appreciate it. I want to start with a segment I like to call
Enough About Me. What do you think about me?
That segment is, how did you meet me? How do you know me? And what were your first impressions? How did we become friends?
So I first met Abby because you are very good friends with my dear husband, Brett. And I think that you guys, I don't even remember the actual backstory, but I think that you went to some sort of nerd camp or something together. is that correct?
You're very close to the truth.
Okay.
Rachel went to the nerd camp. Oh. I was giving her the background. I was like, so Rachel and Brady like went to summer school, like, for fun, like, yes. They weren't in trouble. And I was like,
me that earlier,
jumping off cliffs and canoeing. And I was like, but seriously? Yeah. So I was not one of the nerds, but yes, Rachel, okay. Who was my best friend and still a very good friend.
Yes. Got it. Okay. So that was initially, I guess my impression is that that is how you met, but now I am more realizing the backstory. So you're good friends with Rachel. Rachel went to nerd camp with my husband. And then it sounds like, I think you and Brett had just remained friends kind of over the course of many, many years. The first time that we met was, I feel like we visited your house. You were like staying at your parents' house or something. Or your husband's parents' house? Did you live with them at some point?
My husband's parents are in Kansas, so no.
So no. Okay.
Yes, that was when we were 2012. We were transitioning to DC.
Yep.
We were home for Christmas.
Totally. And so that was the first time that I had ever met you in person.
So what'd you think of Abby?
She's wild. she's wacky and super fun.
It's a good answer.
And, you know, I mean, anybody who is a good friend of my husband is a good person because Brett's a good person. So, but yeah, I mean, it was like fun to get to know you and Joe. And then we went to your amazing fun wedding in DC. And that was really, I mean, my like next interaction with you, I think.
Yeah, I said to Kim, I'm like, other than a couple of things, like I've basically only seen her at her wedding and she's at mine. The two least times you can really be social,
exactly.
Like honestly.
Yeah.
You know? So that part's too bad. But you are by far an exception, just already chatting with you on the phone because we had never like been able to. And it just drives me crazy. It's like, if you lived 20 minutes away, mm-hmm. I know we would be friends.
Absolutely.
And like, I'm not willing to accept that that's not going to be the case regardless of geography. And that probably comes from having moved all over the world, like my best friends have never been near me. I have not lived in the same state as my brother since I was 9 years old.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So like, that's how much it's like, this has always been my life. Mm-hmm. And so people are like, why do you keep calling me? I'm like, cause you still have to be my friend. I don't care where I am. Anyway. So yeah. So thank you for explaining that. I like that you said wild. That's fun.
Can I just ask, what part of California are you in, Alyssa?
We're in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow. You're right. Like in Los Angeles. Yeah.
We are. Yeah. We're on the east side of town. So we're in this really cool neighborhood called Los Feliz, which is just south of Griffith Park, which is this like 1,000-acre huge park. So there's tons of hiking. The LA Zoo is there. It's and our neighborhood's just, it's really awesome because I feel like there's so many misconceptions about LA, like it's so crowded and there's terrible traffic and there's pollution everywhere.
Totally.
There's nothing, you know, outdoorsy that you can do, but our neighborhood, yeah, like is such an exception. It's super walkable. So yeah, we love it here. We're very happy.
That's awesome.
You know, minus the like COVID surges and whatnot. It's been great.
Yeah. You know, but that's like anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. How has that been for you? I mean, it's been a little over a year, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably even earlier for you. Like what, how are you doing? How are your friends and colleagues doing?
Well, I mean, I think at this point, just like it is for most of the country, things have kind of calmed down. And as more and more people are getting vaccinated, everyone's, you know, breathing, I think, more of a sigh of relief and having like a glimpse of returning to normalcy. I guess I would say at the beginning of all of it, it was super, super stressful, you know, having to still go to work every day and be worried about, are we going to have enough PPE, like, you know, masks and face shields, right, and all of these things. Like I actually got together with a bunch of doctors and we bought our own N95 face masks because we were worried that the hospital wasn't going to be able to provide them for us. Like there was talk about like, are the OBGYNs going to have to cover the ICU because there's, you know, so many doctors going out sick. And it was, I mean, that was super stressful. And even, and then, you know, thinking about like, oh shit, am I going to bring this back to my young children and my husband? And like, what's that going to be like, you know?
Right.
And I mean, not to say that my experience is particularly unique. I think that most people who are in healthcare kind of had a similar experience to that. But especially living in a big city where there were so many more cases, it was super stressful.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
But, you know, thankfully, things are calming down.
Yeah.
So, all good.
I wanted to ask a little bit about, because I don't know your pre-story, really. I know you've probably spent a lot of years in school and a lot of money on that.
Yes, I sure have. Like a mortgage. I have a mortgage and student debt.
Oh. Welcome. Yes, the law school student is very, very welcoming of that. Yes. So we won't go into that. That is a whole other thing. But anyway, yeah. If you can talk about your journey to, you know, to becoming a doctor and what that was like for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know, actually, Abby, if you even know this, but my mom was a nurse midwife. So she delivered babies for a living. And so growing up, that was just like part of my existence, you know, as my mom would get paged and have to go off and deliver a baby, or we'd be in the mall and some woman would come up to us and be like, your mom delivered my baby, you know, and she had so much joy out of her job that ever since I was, I guess like junior high and high school is when I sort of, you know, started thinking like, I want to be a doctor. And I think my parents at the time were like, okay, sounds good, whatever you want to do. You know? But as my schooling continued, I was really consistent with that. Like, nope, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a doctor. So went to undergrad at UC Santa Barbara. I was pre-med there. It was, you know, a really beautiful place to go to school, but also very distracting. But fortunately, I, you know, made it through. And then took a couple of years off after undergrad. And I worked actually as an autism therapist and a bartender. So that was like a fun existence for a couple of years.
That's how we know each other. She was my bartender and then I was hers.
Yeah. So did that for a couple of years, again, like a sort of always planning to go to medical school, but I needed to take the MCAT and blah, 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 blah. Ended up getting into medical school in Vermont. And so I moved out to Vermont, was there for 4 years. It's funny because as Abby, obviously, you know, my husband's from New Hampshire. So whenever people find out that I went to school in Vermont, they're like, oh, so you met on the East Coast. Yeah, actually, no, we met in LA, but it was kind of a fun, you know, New England connection that we had. So went to medical school in Vermont, was there for 4 years, absolutely loved it. New England is just such a beautiful place to live. And then came back to USC for residency.
Why are you sitting there in LA saying that it was so wonderful?
Because my family.
Pick a side. Don't you know there's a war between the East Coast and the West Coast?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
That's still going on.
Well, and I mean, the thing that really brought me back to LA was my family. So my family is in Orange County, and my mom teased me when I moved out to Vermont for medical school. She's like, Alyssa, could you have chosen the absolute farthest away place in the country? Yeah, kind of, but it's amazing. So they were very happy that I came back to USC for residency, and then I met Brett and the rest is history.
Very nice. Abby, I really want to hear about Fem Ed. Like,
yes. I was telling her about Fem Ed.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. We're going to jump over because that's me. But yes. So from my understanding, you've been doing some online stuff to just get women to know more about their bodies, more about all the stuff that happens.
Yeah.
And to be like psyched about it. And so I want you to just talk about that. And with one thing that Kim and I were thinking, just by chance, the other folks that all of us who do this podcast, we all only have boys. So, we, when you're talking about, you know, we talked about little girls and being comfortable with their bodies, but how can, she has 4 boys.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's impressive. You go, Kim. How old are your kids?
13, 10, 7, and 5.
Oh my goodness. Girlfriend, you have your hands full.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, Fem Ed is something that my partner and I hatched up probably 2 years ago is when we first started talking about Fem Ed. And she and I, so Sarah Toogood is her name, and she and I were in residency together at SC, and then we were both faculty there. So we had a private practice at USC for about 10 years. And when I was at SC, I was doing a lot of teaching with the medical students. So I was the clerkship director, so kind of overseeing, you know, their clerkship. So every medical student that would come through OBGYN, I was giving them lectures, figuring out what parts of the rotation that they, you know, would do, making quizzes, kind of all of that. So sort of shaping their OBGYN experience. So, which I absolutely loved, like tons of teaching. It was awesome. And then about a year and a half ago, I left SC. Sarah and I actually left at the same time and moved over to another hospital in Los Angeles. And as a result of that, I'm still working with medical students and residents, but not in the same capacity that I was before. So I really, you know, I'm passionate about education. I really wanted to be able to keep doing something kind of within that realm. And so that's kind of, you know, part of the inspiration for hatching FemEd. So basically, FemEd is this, you know, female health platform. It's mostly online as of right now, that we plan to also give kind of in-person workshops. And it's workshops specifically geared towards females of all ages. So, you know, we have a puberty workshop. We have a workshop that we call the female body that's for basically teenagers, though it could be women of any age, because we all need to know more about our bodies. But it's, you know, essentially private education that people can kind of plug into in order to, you know, learn about some aspect of their female body, whether it's menopause or getting pregnant or going through puberty or, you know, whatever it is.
All of these things that were like not really taught in school. So it's really good that you're doing this, right? Like, I thought it was so awesome that like when Abby told me, I was like, literally like just women aren't taught enough at all in the actual schooling system of like the public school of K through 12, you know, once you get into like college and you know, it's more, oh, I'm going to take this. I'm going to like, that's when you learn. Right. But like for the average woman, the average kid, girl growing up, you know, you get your like little class with like the boys and the girls in fifth grade. And you're like, and then like, what if your parents don't talk to you about things like that? Cause I know my parents didn't.
Nope.
You know, they were not very sexually free or like me, you know what I mean? My mom, not at all. Like my mom is this like little Finnish woman from Finland. And she's like, that's just not how she grew up. She's just like very, okay. So, you know, I take you to this third tampon. I don't know. Like
totally.
So it's like super, I thought it was just like really, really cool. Really, really cool.
Thank you.
And really necessary, really necessary.
I appreciate that, Kim. No, we're super excited about it. Because I 100% agree with you. And I think this is a conversation that we're hearing more and more, that sex ed is failing our kids, right?
But it really
like,
is.
It's just, it's not enough. And the other thing that I would argue is that co-ed sex ed is sort of not appropriate, you know?
Right?
Like, I think it's really hard for kids to feel free to ask questions and be vulnerable when they're around kids of the opposite sex. And obviously as OBGYNs, right? Like, yes, we would love to be able to do courses for males as well, but that's not our wheelhouse.
Right.
So I wanted to unpack it because obviously I come from, I don't know what you know about me professionally, but campaigns and civil rights and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I want to unpack why it's not being taught. And also, because I know it from an academic point, you actually see where the vagina hits the road. but my impression of it is, number one, because most doctors historically were men.
Mm-hmm.
They focused on men's right. bodies. It was like women and then it was like men and then other.
Right.
Like there are parts of the female anatomy that aren't in textbooks to this day.
Yep.
Because like they don't feel that part of the body is necessary. Like necessary, you're just studying what it is.
Mm-hmm. So like I went back to school and I started like learning about biotech. So I'm still getting my biotech degree, but like I learned a lot about how like all these vaccine trials and medicines, pharmaceutical companies, how they really, you don't test on everyone. A lot of medicines are just for, you know, they were tested on these groups of men or, you know, groups of white men or groups of white people. And like, we have like the one maybe Asian person or one African-American person, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just not, yeah. So like,
no, absolutely. I mean, I think we're seeing a ton of that, right? With all the COVID vaccines and how it wasn't tested on pregnant women. So it's,
right?
It's really handicapping us in terms of data.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I would like to jump back if I can before we were talking about the fact that most people, I think, grow up not learning significant amounts about women's bodies, women's health. And I'm wondering how you think about this, of the reasons. Number one, it just wasn't very well known because most people who went to college, most people who had that ability mm-hmm. were men. Most of the work that did involve babies fell to women anyway. Like, it sounds to me like many of the babies throughout history that have been delivered have been by women, but of course not doctors because, you know, it's really hard to have a vagina and be a doctor. I'm assuming you know about that.
A little bit. I know a little.
And third, yeah. And third, this weird concept, and this is the one I'm most fascinated with, just this shame. Like, yes, I don't want to see everyone naked, but like, why at some point is your daughter supposed to put on the top bathing suit and Henry doesn't have, like, genuinely, I didn't mean to grow these. Like where is this hatred of self and body?
Absolutely.
And I, you know, I'm interested in the women's part, but it isn't specific to that. I think there's a lot of shame for men too. But so those are sort of three factors at play. I'm wondering what you think.
No, I completely agree with you. I feel like there is, and even though we are becoming a more and more accepting and gender accepting and gender fluid society, there is still so much negativity when it comes to female anatomy. 100%. Like one of the activities that we do in one of our talks is we have our students create a word cloud where they basically, like, you know, will text in negative slang words for the vagina or for just female anatomy. And it sort of, you know, creates this word cloud. And it's things like,
that's a kind of fun. That sounds like a kind of fun drinking game.
Right. Also a fun drinking game.
Exactly. With all due respect, right? Like that's fun.
I just think that's so amazing that you're doing this.
Like, it's cool, really, right?
It is so cool. Like, yeah,
I know.
I'm like in awe almost, like Alyssa, cause like that is so badass. Like, There needs to be more women like you. You know what I mean? Like doing things like that, for real. Anyways, keep going.
Well, so for example, you know, a lot of the words that come up are like cunt, pussy, vag, meat curtains, clamshell, you know, like all of these like terrible, awful, negative words, right?
Yep.
So then we sort of pause and we say, okay, yep. Absolutely. Like, we have all heard this. None of these words are empowering to us. So let's turn the tables. Like, let's think of more empowering, positive words. And it's so much harder for them to come up with. But they do, you know, we throw in some of our own. And it's so interesting just to like have these two things sort of side by side to highlight exactly the point that you just made, that there's so much more negativity. It's so much easier to come up with like gross negative words for the vagina than it is to come up with positive ones. But I think that's like such a key part of the issue.
This might not be a fair question, but if you're talking to the whole world and there was one thing you could tell them about the vagina that you feel like they don't know or they need to know, what's the one thing about the vagina everyone needs to know?
It's amazing, it's powerful, and it takes care of itself.
Women.
Yep. But specifically the vagina. It's awesome.
Tell me more.
So it's interesting. Yeah, as I think, Abby, you know this. So we also have this Instagram account. So we're posting on Instagram, and we're right now in the middle of this series that's all about like vaginal and vulvar health. And so things that we've been talking about recently are like, for example, the bacteria that live in the vagina and how this is intentional. Like we have this perfect balance of bacteria. There's a bacteria that creates lactic acid, and that keeps the vagina sort of acidic, which prevents different bacteria that are not supposed to be in there from growing. It can kill viruses. Our vaginas can make actually hydrogen peroxide, which kills some viruses. Like it's stuff like that where you're like, that's so cool.
That is so cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Vaginas need capes. Like super
Seriously.
Vagina.
Super vagina. They absolutely need capes. I love that.
Yeah.
But like, you know, so they clean themselves, they lubricate themselves. Like, you know, we had this other post the other day where I was talking about all of these like female health, like vaginal hygiene products, you know, like Summer's Eve and, you know, pH balancing sprays and all this like crap that, you know, is available in stores, and how almost on the daily, I tell at least one patient, don't use things like that. You know, that it's like not common knowledge that your vagina doesn't
daily?
Need that. Oh yes, literally.
Still. All that stuff feels so douches, 80s to me.
Like douches, that's what that's like. Summer's Eve, if that's like a douche or no?
Well, Summer's Eve is more like a pH balancing, like body wash. It's like a body wash for your vagina. Yeah, people don't use douche as much. Like, I feel like, you know, we'll bring up the term douche in, you know, we're talking to teenagers and they're like, what's that? Like, I feel like that's not
douchebag. They know what it is.
Okay.
They know what it is.
Which I actually love.
Did I just date myself? No, I mean, I don't know.
We're older than you. We're older than you, Kim.
I guess so. But not by much. But still, it's probably not good for you, right? I mean,
it is not good for you. Yes, you should definitely not douche.
Do
Leave
not
your
douche.
Vagina alone.
Don't be a douche. Don't douche your vagina.
Exactly.
Should it be illegal?
Should it be illegal? Well, no. I know, because all kinds of things. You can do whatever you want to your body, right? You can put whatever kind of weird.
But I mean, it's not something that like
put on. No, it's not.
This is going to do real harm to young girls if they're misled or anything.
No. No. It's not.
It always just cracks me up, and I'm sure we could go into this as well about, you know, the pink tax, as they call it, where, you know, women's deodorant is more expensive and women's clothes are more expensive, when they're like pH balanced for an active woman. And I'm like, if it wasn't pH balanced, it would like burn your skin. Of course. It's like, it's not caustic acid for a woman.
Right.
It's just so odd. And I also want to ask you, Alyssa, being a privileged white lady in LA, have you smelled Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina?
I cannot tell you. That goes against HIPAA. Oh.
No, it's a candle.
I mean, what if she actually did, Abby? So we don't know. Let's just leave it at that.
No,
it's a candle that she put out.
Have you smelled the candle? Do you agree that it smells like vagina?
I have not actually smelled the candle. No, I need to work on that.
You don't need to buy it. You have some idiot friend who bought it.
I'm not into buying it.
It's like a $60 candle.
Of course it is.
And it sells out.
Yeah.
And
no, thank you.
I'm just curious because I don't even think it's fair to say like my vagina, like my purse, Abby's vagina even has one smell.
It's true.
Like, did I work out that day? Have I like shaved recently? Like,
where are you at in your cycle? What's going on with your,
right.
Yeah, all the things.
So I'm curious, but I do not want to give any money.
I'm
Is that what it's called? Goop?
Oh yeah. Her company is Goop. Yeah, not the candle, but the company is Goop.
That'd be a great word for vagina.
That'd be a terrible thing.
Oh, Gwyneth.
My. You are a silly one.
It's amazing how like the first like year of like feminist and like women's studies is all about the Bible and the vagina. Like that's all it's about.
Yeah.
And you know, Kim, like I have gotten to a point where I'm just frustrated by people not dealing with it.
Yeah.
It's like people still say down there. And I'm like, what do you mean down? It's a vagina. Like what?
Down there.
Absolutely.
Like, right. Yeah. But I feel like that might be a negative term. Like, but you could put like down there. Like, why does it have to be like that?
100%. Yep. Or referring to it as your private parts or right.
Right.
Like all of these terms that are not terms.
Right.
Absolutely.
The actual sales of vaginas, the sales of vibrators are actually like illegal at the time were actually illegal in certain states. So then when I got to law school
I didn't know that.
I had no idea.
Straight up. So then I went and I took sexuality in the law and I got to pursue it more. And like, it's just, yeah, I have to do just a whole thing. It's absolutely fascinating. In a nutshell, basically, you probably have heard this before. Like doctors used to do it, used to like touch women. That would cure their hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I have to talk a little bit quieter because Joe's live right now. So, and not because vaginas are secret, but because I'm too loud.
No problem.
And so women would like, you know, have these fits of hysteria and you had to like rub them out of them. So they go to the doctor. And of course it was a male doctor and they do that. And the male doctors are like, this is getting tiring. Like you need to do this at home. Like we can't just, because women kept coming back like every week and week in the appointments. The doctors are like,
I think I need more of this hysteria rubbed out of me.
But their complete inability to think of women as sexual, as having a sexuality.
What time period was this?
Like the 40s. So the third electrified appliance in America after the iron and the toaster is the vibrator.
What is it called? There's a name.
Sears Roebuck sold them.
No.
There's like a specific name for it.
It was like, it was sold like, you know, one of those brushes that like buffs your skin. It was like, it's good. Get rid of all that. This is your duty to your husband to be a good wife and get rid of your hysteria. And women were like, sweet, you know. Daddy's off at work, kids are at school.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So then basically around the 50s and 60s, we could say it's pornography, but they didn't even know what they were doing yet. There were just all these, the homoerotic things with like men, like with muscles, like standing near one another. Like it was weird. And then it started to have women more in it and the women were using vibrators and it was seen as being sexual pleasure. And immediately they were like, this has to be illegal. They were like, oh crap, that was sexual.
It's so interesting.
That clitoris that we like didn't put in the books that we said was useless. Quite literally, they said that's a useless thing. So there's no reason to study it. I mean, nipples on a man, that seems pretty useless to me, but you can take them off. Like,
yep.
So this was one of my questions for you. You do not have to reveal anything about your sexual past or anything, but do you think you'd be a really good lesbian? Because of how well you know the vagina?
Huh, that is a great question. I think no, mostly because my knowledge of the vagina is so clinical, right? Like everything that I do in the office, like there is zero sexuality in terms of, right? Like examining and delivering babies and all of that. So no.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I feel like I want to answer yes, but I think it's no.
Right. No, well, no. And I don't mean that in an unprofessional sense because that's clear. It's not like you're feeling sexual with that, but just like literally like, oh, well, if you're feeling, you know, I mean, obviously just be useful to be like, if I'm feeling this way, what would I do? You're a doctor. Doctors are as useful for that. But like, oh, hey, we could try this other position because maybe your pelvic bone is in the wrong place. Like when we eat it, like I just like logistically, you know, I've never hooked up with a woman, so I could just be.
And the thing is, I think it's because when you think about sex, it's not necessarily about the anatomy itself. It's your experience of it, right? It's like,
right.
Like the mental and emotional aspects and like when your partner touches you in this way with this vibration or this, you know, when it happens in this order, like things that are not medical per se.
Right. I feel like those two things are separated, right? I mean, I would feel, you know what I mean? It's not like,
Absolutely.
Like, even just having the knowledge of your anatomy and whatever, it's not like you're like laying and right. You're not like, well, if you move this way, then I think that, you know what I mean? Like, no, it's just like, oh, I like when you touch me this way because that's how it makes me feel. Like, yeah.
Exactly.
I see that. Like, absolutely.
Yeah. And just how, like, individualized it is and how personal it is, right? That, like, we all have, in theory, as females, the same anatomy, but how different we respond to different, you know, different touch, different pressure, different whatever.
Absolutely.
But I would like to be able to say again that I could be a really good lesbian, but I don't know.
All right. You know, if Joe and Brady die, we'll try it out.
All right. Sounds good.
Kim, do you have any other questions for Alyssa?
I actually have to probably go here soon though.
Oh, this is fun.
You did great.
We'll do this again, Abby. We'll do this again.
What's in food this week, ladies?
Oh my God, we chicken fried steak tonight and it was amazing. Woo-hoo!
Chicken fried. For those non-Southerners out there or for like strict New Englanders, what is a chicken fried steak, Becca?
Gotta have cube steak, all right? You pound that stuff out real flat. Cube steak's not like the king of steaks. It's a working man's steak, okay? You can afford that steak. Pound that shit out. And then you got like the flour, egg, flour, a little bit of mix. You put some Tabasco. I don't believe in Tabasco. So Tapatio or Cholula is what we ended up using. It wasn't deep fry, shallow fry. Does that make sense? Phenomenal. But I think, well, we pan fried it. Yes. The meat was good too. It was my aunt's cow. They get a cow every year. So it was like a nice, happy, grass-fed, beautiful cow. So they're delicious.
Keyword was. Are you kidding? Chicken fried steak is amazing. Though a close rival and even a cousin is the country fried steak, which is incredibly popular down here. And I think they're not very different. I mean, it's a battered piece of beef. Not necessarily steak grade, but wonderful.
Well, is cube steak steak? Or do they just call it that? I thought it was just like this tough-ass cut of meat. You can't just grill up a cube steak because you're going to have problems unless you're slow grilling it and smoking it for like 17 hours or something.
Country fried steak and chicken fried steak are quite similar. A chicken can't be a cow, people. Country fried steak is dusted and with flour and usually served with brown gravy and onions. Chicken fried steak is usually breaded with eggs and served with cream gravy. Both sound amazing, and I think you both should make them and try them.
Actually, a lot of places around here, you don't even get the onions. It's just the gravy, because the gravy's the most important part. I can confirm that it is all three. It is chicken, it is fried, it is steak. Or it's fried in chicken grease? No, eggs. So there is a chicken element.
That is true, and I will say gravy, man, when it's done right, is just really sublime. But when it's done wrong, it's not worth even, just don't even come at me with your bad gravy. I will have none of your gravy.
I think as you said, like working person food, all the good food in the world is like made from whatever you can get the best flavor out of something that otherwise would kind of suck, you know? So like gravy's like take the most concentrated flavors of the meat and like turn it into juice. I can smear things in and dip in. I can fill a bathtub with gravy and take a fucking swan dive into it. I don't know. I don't know your life. I'm not judging. Chicken fried steak. It's just so many things and it's so far down like the heart attack row to me. Like, can I make that?
You need to make it. It's wonderful. And while it slowly kills you, you feel alive.
Yeah, dude, if it's not slowly killing you, you know, it's all the best foods are doing that to you, man, I think.
We here are strong supporters of gravy in all its forms.
Hear, hear.
I just learned that Becca was a gravy snob. I can tell you that. Don't come at me with bad gravy.
Yeah, don't come at me with no Heinz gravy from a jar.
I don't think it's about snobbery. I think it's about integrity. Because it is poor people food. To me, snobby means, oh, it's got to be like high-end rich. But no, it's absolutely the poor people food.
Is it?
I think she's more rustic. if that's the right word.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, I definitely want homemade gravy.
But is gravy a poor people food? Do we still? It is.
Well, back in the day, you know, they just give the scraps and the bones to all the poor people, and they would boil them forever to try to get some flavor out of it.
Of note, they did not give the scraps and bones. They were at a reduced price. You, whatever food you have, you put it in the pot and like you just never clean it. And it pretty much just cooks forever. And you just keep, you know, stirring it and eating out of it and adding more things and stirring and eating out of it and adding more things forever.
It's also been called hobo stew.
That sounds like pretty easy. Like right, if I could just do that.
There's a version of that in almost every society. You know, the pasta version is called puttanesca, which is the pasta of the ladies of the night, the prostitute pasta.
Because I've heard of puttanesca.
Right. Well, that's literally like the pasta of
prostitutes.
Yeah. And the hobo's food, like all the most, like, that's what I mean. It's the opposite of snobbery, right? Because it's like, no, it's got to be more basic, you know?
Well, yeah. Poor people had access to the ingredients to make gravy, basically.
And that they made it because they had to, not because
they necessarily
wanted to.
But then at the end of the day, you're like, well, I will eat this gravy.
Well, that turned out great. All good food.
I just learned, again, the history of gravy and that ladies of the night like pasta.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm just going to say, I don't like gravy.
Whoa.
I'm sorry.
No, we are a pro-gravy podcast.
Ew. Oh, sorry, Duncan.
We're going to have to kick you off the podcast.
I mean, I can be kicked off the island. I'm fine with it. Almost. I'm all about everyone. I'm pro choice, man, but I am not a gravy fan myself.
I'm just disappointed.
I'm sorry. Don't judge me.
I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
That's even worse.
A lot of things I won't judge you on. Sexuality, your personal choices. However, I am judging you.
I feel like that's a personal choice. Though,
no, it's not a religion.
I don't know. I just don't like. Okay, I can. Okay, you know what? What gravy I can do? The white gravy over sausage and biscuits. Like, and it's got to be good.
It's cream gravy.
One time I've had it, and I liked it.
It's butter and sausage and cream. What's not to like?
It's true.
Right. So like brown gravy, like gravy on like mashed potatoes, gravy on like turkey.
But have you had the Amish version?
No.
Every time with the Amish.
You know what? Maybe now that like I eat more, I might like gravy.
Instead of you only eat to live.
Right. Right.
Duncan, how excited are you about using real magic?
I'm real dang excited.
and I want to be clear, when we spell real and magic, we spell real R-E-E-L and magic M-A-J-I-C.
They've been fantastic. Yes. They really help us out.
They really do. Real Magic took our podcast from just being an idea and a whole bunch of random audio files to actually being a podcast. They freed up all our time so that we could just focus on making great content and all of our cool ideas.
And yeah, they do all the like work that I don't know how to do, but they're really good at it.
Right, and they make us sound awesome. And if you go to realmagic.com, that's R-E-E-L-M-A-J-I-C.com, and use the coupon code THRIFTY10, Thrifty, like thrift store, THRIFTY 10, Thrifty10, for 10% off the first month of whatever package you choose on Real Magic.
It's a word and numbers.
Now remember, the code is use Thrifty10 and go to realmagic.com.
Let them work the magic.
Whoa! a Worcester. $1.25, please.
Put the tea on. I have stories.
Bill's brother is 5 years younger than him, and cousin Jim's here. And up in our unfinished, like, garage barn, the party barn, they have, like, old office lighting up there, and the ceilings are low, and there's, like, one of those, like, what are these? It's not a dumbbell, because it's that one solid pushy-uppy.
Bench press.
So, you know, it was either Jim or Nate. Nate says it's not him. Jim says it wasn't him, but one of them, and I'm, like, standing there, like, ha-ha, they're lifting weights. Goes right up into the freaking triple fluorescent ball smash. Like, you know,
I am so strong.
You know, I want to smash the chandelier. Just laughing. I'm like, I'll be right back. So I come back, I go down and I get the shop vac and I bring it back up and I'm drunk vacuuming up the shop vac, at which point our friend Thoman comes, and he didn't get there till like 12:30, but he had to walk through like the driveway and the downstairs of the garage to get to the point where I was vacuuming glass. And he was like, it's like walking into another fucking planet. There's like a big campfire going. People are laying down over there. I don't know who that is. And just like that somebody came as like a really good, legit Gene Simmons from Kiss. And he's like, where's Becca? Where's Bill? Bill got voted to bed already. Becca's upstairs. And so he comes up and he's
like, you can get voted to bed.
Yeah.
That's a thing. Yeah.
Only Bill really.
I vote you to sleep now.
Yeah. Yeah. And Bill will go, who thinks I should go to bed? And then he'll take a poll. Like, everyone will raise their hands.
It's always everyone raising their hands.
It's always everyone. And so Matt comes up the stairs like, oh my God, what the hell is going on? And I turn around with the shop vac, and he came as a nun, and the shop vac just sucked his habit right off his head. And he was like, whoop. And I was like, and he was like, you better give me that. You're like going to fall in that closet.
I got it. It's okay.
No, about the habit.
Yeah, it made a great sound going into that shop vac. It was like, whoop. Before anybody could say to me, just turn around, it was gone. I was like, I'm so sorry. I was like, what is even happening here?
You are like,
I don't know.
I'm sorry about your habit.
Yeah. Well, I was going to leave it because I was like, you sucked it up with glass. It was one of those cheap costumes anyway. And it's just Matt Thoman. Who cares? So, yes.
You said it was a bad habit.
It was a bad habit. I wrote it off as a bad habit. Big time, Duncan. You said it. And Bill like shook it out and gave it back to Sheldon. Like, why is it over in the glass?
Here you go. I'm so sorry. Do you want to wear this again?
So sorry.
Good idea to put this on your skull and near your eyes. Great idea.
Yeah, I shook it out for you. Yeah. I shook it out.
Word. I had glass.
It was glass treated. Kind of like instead of acid wash, it was glass treated.
Oh my God. I'm going to reach it. Yeah.
That I have to tell y'all because you're women and it will amuse me more than anybody.
Okay. Okay.
A gynecologist who runs negative TV ads against this competition.
What?
A pap smear campaign.
Oh.
Alyssa would love that.
Yeah.
That was the gynecologist we interviewed this week. Pap smear.
Pap smear campaign.
A big thanks to everyone who contributed to the pilot episode of Sex, Politics, and Bacon. For more information on Dr. Quimby's campaign, check out fem.ed on Instagram. And be sure to join us next time for our chat with a world-renowned rope dart performer and instructor.
I think the easiest way for people who have never heard of the rope dart before to be introduced to it or to think of it is think of it kind of like skateboarding or skateboards, in that it was very much an underground subculture thing that slowly over time, like, you know, when you saw the first people doing, you know, the coolest flip tricks with skateboards, it was like, whoa, you know, it how did they do that? It was amazing. It looked like magic.
And please join us next time for more stories, ideas, and laughs from the Thrifty team. Until then, take care of you. And don't forget to subscribe to Sex, Politics, and Baking.
Boston? Can you say bye-bye?
Bye-bye. See you next time.
Okay, so when you find yourself getting frustrated that, quote unquote, these dumb people in America keeps doing these dumb things and following morons like Ted Cruz and whatever other horrible party foul bad friend no ovaries idiots, you think, oh, those people, it's because they're dumb or they just need to hear more about policy or something more intelligent. That's not what they're reacting to. When people are acting dumb, as it were, or strange, it's generally because of their past experience or their trauma coming out of them sideways in a weird way. That's why it's called trauma. It just comes out of you weird. It makes you act weird. That's the definition of trauma. My definition, copyright, Thrifty Green, 2021. I mean, 2020, whatever. These people, there is something in them, some tiny little fear and belief that is twisting a decision that doesn't make sense. And it can be as simple as, well, you know what? I've heard this one. Well, it's stupid that they care whether they're called Hispanic or Latin. That's stupid. Like, it can be this little thing and this one little, like, understanding of, well, it's different countries, dude. It's different continents, dude. It's different places, dude. You get mad when someone thinks you're a Yankees fan. What's your fucking point, right? And that little tiny decision grows into something more understandable, but it's not about the issues. It's about that person's issue and nobody in their mind in power giving a crap about what they think. You know? Like, when your parents, like, do that one more time and you're gonna, you know, and they're like, oh, I'm gonna do it 5 more times, you know? Without rationality, but just emotion, what could these people be saying by their illogical outrage? Mommy, can you hear me? Maybe they're all constipated. I mean, everybody feels better when they're regular. That's what we need. We need some laxatives. People are just what?
Tired.
Tired of what?
They don't get home to sleep.
Just sleep deprivation. I think sleep deprivation and...
They don't eat well.
Yeah, and we all don't. But sleep deprivation and, you know, you could say not getting laid, but I think it's really a lack of intimacy in their lives. Lack of connection. The opposite of depression and anger is connection.
Nobody's bodies work. Plus, at least one guy has an inverted penis.
I mean, we'll have to get our pod gynecologist on to talk about that from FemEd, Dr. Alyssa Quimby, because, maybe she doesn't know a lot about inverted penises, but she definitely learned about it in med school. I want to just sit with her for like 2 hours and just ask her all the craziest medical questions.
Is an inversion conversion possible?
Conversion to what?
Inversion conversion? To non-inversion.
Inversion, conversion to like a spaceship?
No, to regular.
Regular. There's nothing regular. Everyone's bodies is how they should be. To a more traditional penis shape.
Traditional.
Listen, I'm going to put you on blast here. I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to share this, okay? Joe's just playing silly jokes. He has an inverted penis and he doesn't want to openly talk about it.
What?
Yeah, as your wife, I can tell the world, and nobody else really is going to check unless you do something gross. So now you've inverted a penis. Let's go ask a doctor about it.
Licked my balls.
Perfect.